there's moonbeams in your elbows, and there's rivers in your head. And I wanna see you forever, babe, forever. Don't take me back in time now, but there's nothing for me there. Welcome to On the Wing Podcast, fueled by Purina Pro Plan. Today, we've got a breaking news edition of On the Wing Podcast. It's being recorded at this very moment at National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic in Kansas City. It's the biggest piece of news we have coming out of the event. So thank you for joining us to listen for this one. If you're if the words public lands and access mean anything to you, stick with this episode. It's going to be a good one. Want to shout out right out of the gates, again, Purina Pro Plan, the national dog food sponsor of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's Wildlife Habitat Mission, and the presenting sponsor of On the Wing Podcast. All three of my pups, Esky, Gitchy, and Winter, eat Purina Pro Plan, not just because Purina supports the Wildlife Habitat Mission of our organization, but because they have a team of the world's best scientists and nutritionists behind their dog food. Learn more at ProPlanSport.com. Purina Pro Plan, nutrition that performs. Waiting patiently as I get the commercial mentions out of the way, we got Ben Bredigan, Onyx Hunt's marketing manager. Is that the new title?
That's the new title.
New title. Yeah. Congratulations
Thank
on the
you,
promotion.
I think.
How long have you been in the new title?
6 months or so.
Oh, now. Well, that's yeah. That's quite a while.
Yeah.
Well, so how's the new job going?
Well, I've got my old job and I've got my new job, so that's fun. No, it's fantastic. It's great. I got a good team. So,
so your old job and your new job. Your old job, is that what Nate is doing?
He's going to be doing social and some of that. Yeah, I'm like going to start dumping things on Nate. Nate's going to be my dumping ground for a while.
Is there anything you want to announce to Nate on the podcast?
Yeah, well, what do they say? SHIT flows downhill. I'm just kidding.
So for listeners, Nate Akey, our social media manager at Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, left about maybe a month ago now,
yep.
To join Ben in the Onyx team. So he's still part of the family.
He jumped ship, but now it's always nice to have some more allies.
It is.
To conservation.
It is, so. Absolutely. So congratulations, Nate, on a new gig. You'll probably recognize Ben's voice. Ben has been on, you've been on podcasts all up and down the Upland podcasting dial. It seems like there's more and more Upland podcasts every day, but you've been on with Travis Frank. You're on with me, episode 227.
Yes.
Sitting in the Namekagon Barrens of Wisconsin.
Similar to this right now, but just significantly different.
And on that episode, 227, we introduced a concept in South Dakota called the Public Access to Habitat Program, the PATH Program. And I'm teasing that because that's what we're going to talk a little bit about here in a few moments. The other featured guest I have on, also from a previous episode, episode 210, John Locks, Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's Permanent Habitat Programs Manager, and kind of the public lands creator, you know, embodiment of the organization. How do you like that?
I enjoy it. Yep. No, everything public access. It's neat to have that as a priority for the organization. I like to be helping lead that charge. So,
And you hail from Nebraska,
correct?
And yep. You came to us. You've been with the organization 2-ish, 3 years,
a little over two.
2 years, yep. And you came from the Nebraska Game and Parks Commission,
correct? Right? Yep.
Where you were the main upland biologist, the pheasant and the quail guy, right?
I was. I kind of was a jack of all trades there. I did the Upland Bird stuff. I also was the coordinator for their state walk-in program, Open Fields and Waters. So that's where kind of my background lies and my interest in public access. So it was kind of a natural fit.
Did you grow up as a public land hunter? Or did you have some private land that in your family?
I would say mostly private. Okay. It was probably college where I really ventured out from there and started utilizing public land and you know, just finding all the opportunities that were out there. Hmm. So, yep.
You did also join us on, well, you've been on a couple Rooster road trips. Most yep. recently, what, the 2020, let me think here, 2022? Is that right? Yep. Or 2023.
I think it was 23.
You yep. were with us.
Yep.
We hunted a waterfall production area that was filthy with birds.
Yep. It's a good spot.
Yeah. 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 We won't drop a pin on it. Yeah. It was in Nebraska, and you know, waterfall production areas, I think, are overlooked largely. They're really overlooked in Nebraska, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll leave it at that.
We'll keep it that way.
Did you grow up as a public land or private land or a combo?
Public land, man.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, I mean, my parents had some deer land, you know, a little 40.
Northern Minnesota?
No, actually down on the Minnesota River bottoms.
Oh, okay.
So, but I mean, that was deer hunting and you got to have a lot. Well, you guys know, you have to have a ton of land to be considered a private land
yeah.
bird hunter, yeah. unless you're just not hunting that much. But yeah, 100% public land, grew up doing it. So
it's pretty important to you personally.
Oh yeah. I don't remember the last time I've hunted. Well, maybe once a year I'll hunt private land mm-hmm. for birds, and that's knocking on doors. So it's, I couldn't do what I do without public land.
And we were supposed to, got canceled for, things fell apart with the folks we were going to hunt with. It probably ended up being fortuitous because there was a major storm.
Yes, there was. Right? Yeah, that would have been
We
bad.
Were supposed to hunt the Mississippi-Louisiana border mm-hmm. for woodcock and bobwhite quail, and that was all largely going to be on public land too.
Yeah.
Which I think is a testament to like your ability to find public land in places that people don't naturally think, right? Yeah. Like, cause you spent yeah. some time working for Primos down in that area and you found some cherries of yeah. public land.
Yeah. It was interesting because I didn't have that mindset. I knew quail were in Mississippi, but I knew they were hard to find. A lot of them were on private land. But one thing, so I would keep going to Kansas or South Dakota and, you know, 8, 10, 12 hour drive. And I got to looking around, and it's like, oh, there's a lot of woodcock around. And all of a sudden, digging into it and start finding spots. And you know, I was finding woodcock 10 minutes away from my house.
Hmm.
So there's opportunity out there almost regardless of where you live.
Yeah.
It's just, it might be a little different.
It's going to be different. Yeah. Yep.
But, yeah, it was a fun experience.
Get a good bird dog, and they tend to find birds.
That's the idea, yes.
How many bird dogs do you have right now?
Four.
Do you?
And I have a four and then a hound.
You do?
She's
do you,
old. She's
do you
like
hunt with the hound?
14, no.
Okay. No, so give me the lineup. I know you got an English pointer, at least
yep.
one.
So from top to bottom, I've got she's I think 10 or 11 now. Annie, she's a Drahthar.
Yeah.
I've got Herbie, who's he's 7. He's a Drahthar as well. And then I've got Amos, who's a pointer, and Fred. My youngest, Fred's 2. He's a little English setter.
Setter,
so.
That's right.
Yep.
So 2 draughts, a pointer, and a setter. What's going to be the fifth?
Well, see, now I'm honing in. Like, I had to try everything, right?
Uh-huh.
So it's going to be hard to go away from a pointer.
Yeah, that was where I thought you were going to, based on just mm-hmm. conversations with you, I thought you were going to go back another pointer.
We'll see. I mean, I wanted to sell Fred, my little setter, about every time, every week I want to sell him, but then I'll see a glimpse of greatness. I was like, I can't get rid of him. And so this last trip I took to Nevada and Arizona and New Mexico, he turned it on.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, I do not, it's my daughter's favorite dog, so I can't really get rid of him. It's like, I don't want to feed a damn useless dog. But he, like, the light switch flipped, and he was the, every time I dropped him, he was the day dog. So, it's like, thank God.
Well, that's a perfect transition to the English setter owner to my left. You have two now, right?
Two, yep.
What are the ages and the names?
Lucy, she is 7 now, and Pearl, who's just over a year. So,
and will your third dog be an English setter?
We'll have to see.
Yeah. Pearl's a little bit more of a challenge.
She's a challenge. I chuckle because that's probably more up to my wife if we're gonna have a third one. Mm. So, they've been plenty with kids at home and everything else going on. But a lot of fun.
Yeah. Three dogs is a lot of work, as you know. I can't even imagine what four is like.
Got a phone call last night. Fred got out of the fence. He ended up finding him. And the last thing she said is, you're not getting any more dogs.
things like that always have to happen when you're gone every time.
And you have two little kids, right?
One little kid. I've got a 2.5-year-old daughter. So.
Okay. So you have room for another dog.
That's what I say. Thank you, Bob. Yeah. Thank you.
All right, as we get rolling into this, folks want to follow along on your phone, your pad, your tablet, your laptop. You can go to pheasantsforever.org/path, and you can see our path landing page, public access to habitat landing page, and that's what we're going to focus our conversation on today. We'll start kind of a state of the state for public access as we get rolling here. And I think about circa 2020, the board of directors at Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever added the word access into our mission statement, which for some folks, that'll be a head scratcher because we have done access as an organization for a long ass time. And I think to Pheasant Run 1, Nobles County, Worthington, Minnesota, was our first ever land acquisition. That took place in 1986.
Crazy.
Right? 1986.
40 years ago?
Time flies, right? Almost 40 years ago. Now, in Nobles County alone, there, if you start on Pheasant Run 1, purchased in 86, you can walk contiguously from access point to access point 12 miles of public land that was created in that county. And it's largely to do with protecting the water of the town of Worthington for the business community, and they're doing it through public land acquisition and protecting the wellhead and the water quality. But 12 miles of continuous habitat, and that's not a foreign idea, is purchasing land to protect water quality. But my point is that we've been doing land acquisition and access walk-in programs. We've been back in the day when it was called Open Fields and Waters, or Open Fields, which is now VPA HIP, Voluntary Public Access Habitat Incentives Program, which is the walk-in program built on top of within the Farm Bill. We were at the very beginnings of that as well. But for whatever reason, the word access wasn't integrated into our mission statement until 2020. From that move, kind of your position, John, was created. So maybe give us a overview of what you do and then give us a state of the state for access after that long ass introduction.
No, you bet. So with access becoming a priority of the organization, it is significant because that means we are specifically putting resources towards increasing access. This is increasingly important to our membership to have places to go. So it's important we have it in our strategic plan. So with that came the investment of adding some capacity around this. That's where my position, as well as my counterpart, Eric Sitzma, who is our habitat development officer based in Iowa, we were hired to kind of bridge a gap between two of our kind of internal
departments.
And
the Conservation Operations Department, which people can think about as the shovel turners, right?
Delivery folks, yeah.
The folks that actually get habitat on the ground. And then the development department, which is creates the money to help turn those shovels or bulldozers, brush hogs.
Chapters, donors, corporate partners. Yep. So yeah, we were hired on or into our positions in December of 2022. So just a little over 2 years ago. And our main emphasis has been on the Build a Wildlife Area program that you alluded to earlier, and that is our fee title acquisition program, where we specifically work with partners targeting strategic land acquisition. So that is a big priority, and we've accelerated our fundraising efforts. We've added capacity to expand our efforts around that. So that's what comes to mind when we talk public access is publicly owned land, right? State, federal, conservation partner lands that we all can access. So we do have efforts in place to create more of that, but we also recognize there's challenges with that, right? Land values are not going down. It's tough to work at scale, the scale necessary to address that access issue, which is one of the biggest issues for today's hunters. So that kind of lends itself towards, well, what else is out there, right? And that's where we're coming at this from the path standpoint. But we have private land that's open to walk-in hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, accessing private lands is still very popular. 75% of hunters utilize private land exclusively or at least half the time. That's even today, which is pretty surprising.
Yeah, it is.
That's hunters across the board.
Yes.
That makes sense. Like my time in, I mean, deer hunters, right? They make up the bulk of hunters.
Right.
Correct.
And you look in the Southeast where that's where the majority of the hunters in the country are.
Yep.
That's a pile of private land.
Yeah,
it is. Yep.
I got some interesting stats on this.
Yeah, drop them on us.
So just illustrating the importance of public private land access programs. Mm-hmm. So, and kind of the spatial aspect to it. So 60% of all land in the U.S. is privately owned. Not surprising. 85% sits west of the 100th meridian, which runs roughly through from Bismarck to San Angelo. Again, we all know that there's a lot of public land in the west.
Mm-hmm.
Take the BLM, 245 million acres of land that they own. Guess how many acres fall east of that 100th meridian?
Of BLM land?
Yeah.
Almost none.
Zero.
3,800 acres only. Wow. That's like
0.001%. 3,800, yeah. It's got to be like one mine in Kentucky that's owned by BLM, right? I mean, there's very little BLM land in the east.
So, and to frame that in terms of population, 80% of the population lives east of the 100th meridian.
Right.
Right? 85% in the west, but the population lives in the east. So, like, that is why.
Yeah.
That's why these public or the private land access programs are so important, because, I mean, you guys do, you'd live it every day with building BAWA projects, and it's like, that's expensive though, right? That's expensive. It's hard to scale.
To buy enough land to solve the problem is impossible.
So that's like, that's why we're here.
You take just one more layer of thinking about it from east to west, and you think about public land in the east, and I don't know the percentage off the top of my head, but I think about state forests and national forests probably make up the majority of it as you head to the east, right? Because the forested
with the Appalachians.
Appalachian, the Great Lakes. Like, there's not a huge limiting factor for public land if you're a rough grouse hunter.
No.
It really isn't. But if you are a pheasant or a quail hunter, east of the 100th meridian, that's where it becomes a challenge, and that's largely why we added access to our mission and been trying to solve this, right?
Yep. And you noted the 60% is privately owned. We have a lot of states that are over 95%. So that's where
Nebraska.
Yeah. That's where your opportunity lies, is to work with private landowners in those states.
So. Kansas, the state like just a couple miles to the west of us, is the 49th state out of, there's 50 states in They're 49 states.
Good stat, Bob.
Yeah.
What's
total number of public access?
What's 50, like Rhode Island?
Or, it is. Yeah. It's one of those really tiny.
Which is insane. Yeah. You're thinking like Connecticut. You're saying Connecticut has more, you know, these small states.
Yeah, by percentage.
Oh, gotcha,
by
gotcha.
Percentage,
yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that makes sense.
But yeah, Kansas, 49th. Crazy. Yeah. All right. So we're trying to solve this problem. Let's go to South Dakota, where that helps tell the first step of this path story. And go ahead and give us the narrative. Folks have probably heard it because we've talked about the Aberdeen Pheasant Coalition. But for folks that haven't, let's start there.
Yep, you bet. So just to take a quick step back, when we refer to these walk-in programs, these are administered and delivered by state wildlife agencies, right? They're not our program.
Right. Good point.
But I will say we're uniquely positioned to play a role in this. Mm-hmm. You know, we have private lands biologists that work one-on-one with landowners. We work in partnership with those state agencies, so we're all working on the same team. So our efforts around access are typically around private lands access are typically to help elevate those programs, and that's what we set out to do in South Dakota. So we had dating, you probably know the year on this, but we had a farm bill biologist named Emmett Lenahan, and he was based in north central South Dakota,
Brown County in Aberdeen,
and he formed, with help of his chapter, the Aberdeen Pheasant Coalition. So this brought together business owners, tourism departments, other conservation groups to really rally behind this connection between hunting and the rural economy. They saw the benefit of having habitat, of having places to go, and what that did for their community. And so they rallied the troops. They pulled together over $100,000 fundraising, and they utilized that to help further incentivize landowners to enroll in South Dakota CREP, which creates new habitat. And CREP also, those acres are also in the walk-in area program for South Dakota Game, Fish, and Parks. And so in doing that, we're working together. We're putting a cherry on top for these landowners to really help elevate enrollment. So they were able to add 4,000 new acres of habitat that's publicly accessible right around within that county around Aberdeen.
You also mentioned the cherry on top. So let me add the layers to the cherry pie, right?
Like, yep.
So the foundation for private landowners is they often enroll in a conservation program at the federal level. And that's largely CRP
or
right?
CREP. Yep.
Or CREP, which is a variation of CRP targeting water quality in a particular river watershed. Or there's slight differences depending on where you're talking about. But CREP or CRP is the foundation. Landowner enrolls in that. Still privately owned, and they get a payment. Walk-in programs and pick your favorite state. South Dakota walk-in, plots in North Dakota, open fields and waters in Nebraska.
Weehaw
in Kansas.
Block management, Montana. Yeah.
Block management.
Access, yes, in Wyoming.
OLAP in Oklahoma. That is another layer that's paid by the state, often with federal funding through VPA HIP, Voluntary Public Access Habitat Incentives Program, which is in the Farm Bill. So it's kind of a combination of some state and federal funds to add another layer on, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Add another layer on to the landowner to get more money, but that opens it up to public land hunters. Now, what's happened with the Aberdeen Pheasant Coalition is, well, if that's not enough, right? It's like the pocket fishermen, just wait, there's more.
For sure.
Right? The cherry on top is, you know, business community in Aberdeen added another layer of money. And these are if you've hunted in that Brown County area, it's the turquoise polygon signs.
Yep.
I don't remember exactly how many, it's not eight like a stop sign, but maybe eight like a stop sign, but it's turquoise. And that is an added layer of the funding to open it up for public access for the Aberdeen Pheasant Coalition. So that was the foundation of this PATH concept, right?
Correct. And the thing with that approach is that, you know, you can fundraise, you can secure money, you can put it towards a one-time incentive payment, and because it's coupled with those programs, you're getting the 10-year benefit of that new habitat, of that access. So that model, you know, was something we felt could be exported elsewhere. And we did take a run at, you know, expanding that to some other communities in South Dakota. And through some of those efforts, it kind of evolved into, why don't we just do this statewide? Mm-hmm. And so that's where they termed the South Dakota Path Initiative in South Dakota. Functions very much how we just described, with an incentive on the front end. It's typically $25 an acre, one-time payment. With that, they target new habitat that's recently seeded, typically.
And the keyword is the habitat piece, too, because it does incentivize Correct. The improved habitat.
It does. Because all those things are coupled, you're getting it all.
Yep.
So, again, like we talk about, you know, make your dollars count. Mm-hmm. This is where it can count, you know.
Because a lot of folks will listen and think, well, you know, I've gone to some of those walk-in programs, and I roll up to it, and it's just a, you know, managed hay and graze for an emergency haying reason, for yep. whatever reason, because of the climate or weather patterns. It is a pool table. And they've driven however far, and they get there and like, well, there isn't anything for me to hunt here. Mm-hmm. Not the case with PATH. There is Correct. That. It's got to be enrolled. It's got to be high-quality habitat to be enrolled in the program.
Correct. That being said, you know, these producers are also enrolled in a USDA program, and they have to meet those requirements. So if they do have management requirements as part of their contract, that is understandable, and that kind of comes with it. But yes, we target high quality grassland seedings, wetlands, other, you know, other high quality habitats. So it's really a way to, and these are all new acres, which is so cool. You know, yeah. I think that's just a selling point, you know, when we talk to business owners, partners, chapters, is, you know, we're putting new acres on the ground. So really
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, and we all know new acres generally are the best producing acres when it comes to birds too.
Yep, for sure.
So how many acres roughly do we have in South Dakota enrolled in PATH right now?
We currently have just over 25,000 acres wow. in the first year and a half. Ultimately. And so it, with that, the goal was to enroll 10,000 new acres every year.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't have been able to do that without our guy that's on the phone
right.
here. So Onyx.
On the phone across the table.
Yeah, across the table. Onyx and South Dakota Tourism, right. you know, we laid out this initiative. They got behind it and said, let's do it. You know, it wasn't something where, oh, we gotta go out and find all this money to make this happen over time. It was like, okay, let's put our money where our mouth is. Mm-hmm. Here's some starter funds. Go put it on the ground, and we did. You know, so.
And Ben, knowing you, you know, after you make this investment, you got to go check it out too.
Oh yeah.
Behind a bird dog. Mm-hmm. So you've been out there. What do you think of the acres you've hunted?
Yeah, I definitely had to QA all of it. I haven't hunted all 25,000 acres yet, but that's on next year's list of things to do. No, I mean, the nice thing, like we were talking about earlier, when you show up to these PATH properties, so they're denoted by the orange circle. It's on the app as well. So you show up, you see it on the map. It's not promising there's birds there, but you are going to walk through some pristine habitat. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing, because I talked to, it was fun, it was a guy from Missouri, never been pheasant hunting, southern Missouri, never been pheasant hunting before, heard the podcast that we did on the Barrens,
huh.
and said, I've never been to South Dakota, I want to go pheasant hunt. And so it was him and his dog, they got up there, and he went to this PATH property and got out and shot his limit of pheasants first evening he was there.
Really? Drove from Missouri sight unseen.
Yep. Never pheasant hunted, period, ever.
Period?
At all.
Holy cow. And did he have a short hair?
I don't remember.
I think it was a white one. Long hair. Long hair.
He might have been. But anyways, like, he was just like over the moon, so stoked.
That's awesome.
Like, he was like, yeah, I was nervous. Like, that's a long way to drive. I don't know what I'm doing. And yeah, so that, like, for me, that's what really hits. Like, that is giving the opportunity for someone to get into that and have success is just so rewarding on multiple levels for me.
That's awesome. I haven't heard that story.
Yeah.
That's great.
Very cool.
All right, so now let's take it to the next state, your home state. Tell us about what happened in Nebraska.
You bet. So about a year after the statewide effort in South Dakota, some things started clicking in Nebraska, and we started looking at creating an initiative, this one being a little more focused within a certain area of the state. And the area that was kind of picked out by our delivery team, you know, and having conversations with Nebraska Game and Parks was around the town of Ogallala. So Keith County, this is right by Lake McConaughey, a big draw in the summertime for Front Range of Colorado.
Okay. Big draw for fishing or boating?
Fishing, boating, you name it. Camping, everything.
I couldn't believe the amount of, like, recreation infrastructure there.
Yeah.
It was wild. It's what, 2.5 hours from Denver? Three hours from Denver?
I think so. I don't know what the visitation is, but it's crazy.
Yeah.
So they already had this big, you know.
Infrastructure
and big, you know, touristy draw. So the thought was, you know, how can we elevate that? How can we, you know, make that full circle and include hunting with it? You know, there are other walk-in areas around that, but not a lot of other public land. And so we set out to offer similar type incentives within kind of a 5-county area in western Nebraska centered around that Keith County. And so, again, this is targeting primarily new enrollments. We did sign up some re-enrolled open fields and waters contracts, but the majority of the acres were new. In that first year, they enrolled over 44,000 acres.
Jeez.
That's significant. Yeah. I mean, it's
in one county.
That would include enrollments in multiple counties.
Okay.
But one of their enrollments that kind of came in late summer this past year was a 25,000 acre ranch. In the sand
really?
Hills.
It was, yeah. So we ate dinner. I went out there and hunted this fall, of course.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
Weird. Ben's been there. Weird.
Anyways, we ate lunch or ate dinner with the gentleman that put 25,000 acres and him and his wife, and just an absolute gem of a human being. And he was excited to see people use his land.
Yeah. So you said it's near the sand hills?
Yeah, just north of McConaughey there.
Yep. Northwest of
Oklahoma. South side of the Sand Hills.
Chicken, yep. Sharpies in that property too?
Check.
Check and check.
Yeah.
Can confirm. Mm-hmm. What about Bob White?
There's a handful out in that area, but probably not west. not on that property.
Yeah. Okay.
Probably lacks some of the woody cover
necessary.
But that area of the state, you know, in addition to being, you know, a great draw with Lake McConaughey there, it's mixed bag heaven. You know, so you got sharp tails, you got chickens, you got pheasants, some bob whites, there's pronghorn on these sites, there's I'm not talking every single site, but there are pronghorn in the area, there's mule deer, there's white tail, there's wild turkey, you name it. Just cool opportunities out there for the public land hunter. So this is really designed to, you know, let's put some stuff on the map, let's show that we can be a draw in the fall and winter as well. So and they've had great success. They're working to engage local communities out there as well. And it's just, there's a lot of momentum. So it's exciting.
So we got two states now. And tell us kind of the statistics on how many acres are enrolled in those two.
Well, in South Dakota, that would be just over 25,000. Okay. And we're right about 44,000 in Nebraska.
Wow. So we're approaching 70,000.
Just about 70. Yep. Between those two states. So
it all helped fueled by Onyx.
Yep.
That's awesome, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that speaks to what Onyx's commitment is to conservation and public access, but it also resonates with you as a human being and a bird hunter,
100%.
Right?
Yeah. I'm business and pleasure on this one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it all started with our founder, Eric Siegfried. And I mean, he built the company off of digitizing hunting maps for public access, because in Montana or in the West, there's not a fence. You all of a sudden take one step and you are on private property.
Yep.
No boundaries, nothing. So, you know, for that reason, like, access was at the core of his DNA.
Yep.
And like that thread has carried out through the company 100%. So it's something that is near and dear, and we've got a lot of people dedicated in the company just to help fund, create access. So Yeah, I mean, the goal is to, our company motto is to awaken the adventure in everyone. Mm. And there is no adventure without access.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's why it's so important.
Well, speaking of Onyx, before we jump to the next phase of our story, give a shout out to Onyx as a proud partner of On the Wing podcast. What you're listening to is brought to you by Onyx. They're a national sponsor of our organization and our wildlife habitat mission at Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. And if, as you're listening to this, you're probably thinking turkeys, and it's time to probably renew or get your Onyx membership. And you can do that and use the code PFQF if you follow the link in the show notes to this episode. And if you use that code PFQF, you'll get 20% off your Onyx membership. And they will make a donation back to Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's wildlife habitat mission and our public access initiatives, which is what we're talking about. All right, so I know, Ben, a conversation happened in Montana last summer. I wasn't at that conversation. I think, John, you were there.
Yep.
But let's hear it from your point of view, because our group of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever folks came to pitch you on a concept. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so obviously, like we talked about, we were involved in South Dakota, Nebraska, and my whole goal is, like, how do we keep this momentum rolling. Mm-hmm. And so the idea was, it's like, and there were lots of things floating around, but how do we scale this from the beginning? Like, yeah, South Dakota is great, Nebraska is great, but there's more to this. How do we scale this effectively so we can cover different states, different, you know, populations, and create more access across the country? And so John was there, Marilyn, Drew Larson, I had our CEO Laura,
Chris Callis
was there. Yep. And a number of other folks from our side, and it was just we piled into a meeting room for a day and just tried to hash this out, right? How do we accomplish the goal of creating more access?
Which brings us to Pheasant Fest. We're on Saturday at, yes, National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic in Kansas City. You made a major announcement.
I'm gonna give you the honors of announcing it, Bob. This is, yeah.
Well, thanks to a long-term investment from Onyx, we are bringing PATH, public access to habitat, to a national level. Our goal is to expand this to all states that want to have it. We hope that's 48 others. I'm looking forward to hunting public land roosters in Hawaii.
There you go.
What do you think, John?
It might be a stretch.
But
Peacock and, yeah, and Franklin and all that stuff.
The pineapple orchards of Hawaii, I'm told, hold roosters. I don't know if it's public land.
I'm going to have to go QA it.
But the major breaking news coming out of Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic this year in Kansas City for us is this program is with so much momentum and such significant support from Onyx. We're taking this to a national level. And what's that mean for folks that are listening, John? So I know there's a tremendous number of state agency folks, corporate partners that are listening to this podcast, and they're thinking, wow. So let me get this straight. We got federal government paying landowners to enroll in conservation programs, and then there's opportunity to get them to open it up public land through walk-in program. And Pheasants Forever is now adding another cherry to get more access to these private lands and high-quality habitat for, you know, Billy Bob and, you know, Becky Sue to go chase birds on. What's, yep, the next step if people are listening?
It's, to me, I guess, you know, to answer your question on what does it mean to have a national program, mm-hmm, to me, and having worked with Build a Wildlife Area kind of in the same way, that means you have full organizational support. And so we're going to develop the framework to, you know, fundraise around this and to leverage this gift, this support from Onyx to its fullest. To work towards our mission. So when we talk about going national, are we going to do it in every state? Probably not. But we're going to prioritize. We're going to be strategic with it, where we can make the most bang for our buck and where we can create initiatives that are additive to existing efforts and also sustainable over time. So we want to do this strategically. Mm-hmm. It's not just, you know, I want to do one over here and over here. Sure. It's you got to have the right partners that are willing to work with you. You got to have the right landscape. And one thing we know is that path is going to look different in different states. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about this incentive-based model with that cherry on top. Some states, that's exactly what they need. Some states, that can be a tool for us to use to target upland bird habitat, for example, right. Or within specific geographies within a state, whatever that priority is within that given state. But there's many state agencies out there that rely heavily on VPA HIP funding, which you mentioned earlier, almost exclusively. And for those states, you know, this wasn't reauthorized recently, although there has been a new bill introduced, right?
Yeah,
The Senate and the House.
As I mentioned, VPA HIP is part of the Farm Bill. We're sitting in limbo without a Farm Bill right now, which means that VPA HIP has not been reauthorized. There was, in February, a new bill introduced to expand it from $50 million up to $150 million.
Correct.
So, fingers crossed, which would be great. That, but still hanging.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, what, $50 million, and that goes across 26 different programs and one, I think, one through 26 states and then one tribal program. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's like there's a need.
There is a need.
You start slicing and dicing that pie, your piece gets really small.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And for those states that are reliant on that, you know, they may not need incentives. They may just need more stable funding.
Right.
You know, in some cases, they may need more capacity to deliver these walk-in programs. And so our national program is really built to provide that framework for all those different strategies we have under PATH. We have the incentive-based approach. We have increased programmatic funding support. We have partnership positions. We have access easements, all these different tools that we can employ depending on what that need is. And that's what's exciting to me is figuring these things out, mm-hmm. you know. And we have a number of state agencies that we're already talking with mm-hmm. that have a huge interest in this. They're seeing what's going on next door.
Right.
And they're saying, man, we want some of that.
So, and some of them are east of the 100th meridian.
Yes.
Too.
Yes.
Well, and one of the other things I wanted to touch on too is the my hope for this is that it becomes more self-sustaining, right? Mm-hmm. Harkening back to the NCAP model in Nebraska, right? Like, sure, like us, we're pouring money into it, et cetera. But in the Aberdeen model, how do you do it? How do you get communities behind it so then hotels, restaurants, et cetera, they're supporting it in their area because they know that they're going to get that money back tenfold, fivefold, whatever.
Right.
And then it just becomes a juggernaut. It's just a self-fulfilling program.
So if folks go on the old Google machine or YouTube and type in Ryan Callahan and Aberdeen Pheasant Coalition. And Ryan, Cal, as you know him mm-hmm. from Meat Eater, did just a phenomenal story that it's a Meat Eater video with the Aberdeen folks and walked down Main Street with business owners, restaurant owners, hotel owners, convention and visitors folks, and Pheasants Forever biologists, and talked about how these added acres are contributing to what Aberdeen has coined pheasant economics, right?
Yeah.
And it adds dollars to Main Street.
Yeah, because Brown County is the number one county in South Dakota for dollars received from hunters, I think.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
It's because there's public land for them to hunt, all varieties of it.
Yeah. And you know, obviously we live in some crazy times right now with the government, et cetera, the Farm Bill in limbo. So to be able to reduce, I mean, it's great that it's there. It's fantastic. Couldn't do it without it. But to hopefully maybe reduce some of our reliance on it, to see it scale and grow.
And I would add that this Onyx support is really a catalyst, you know, for us to explore those other avenues. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we hit on South Dakota and Nebraska's initiative. One thing I didn't mention earlier, the Nebraska one is funded almost entirely with a grant through the Nebraska Environmental Trust. So again, there's different ways to go about securing matching dollars, but you can't show up to a potential funder and say, hey, we'd love for you to fund this and help us out, when you don't have anything to bring to the table.
Would you?
And so
this is one thing that people struggle to understand. Would you take 2 minutes and explain how that works, that matching? Because I mean that's very important for this whole conversation, I believe.
In general, you know, dollars from our local chapters and donors are matched.
Let's say 3-1 on
that's
average.
That's what I was thinking.
You know, well, if you finish your thought, and then I can come back to how it fits with 40X, because mm-hmm. that'll throw some people off from years yeah. past. But go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing I'll add is that we try to leverage everything we do. We're going to look at, you know, different opportunities at the national, state, and local level to really cast that broad net to bring dollars in, you know, to work towards these high priority programs. So
yeah, and that's why us at Onyx, we love working with you, because we know our money is going further than just, if I give you a dollar, you're not going to take that dollar and just put it in. Right. You're going to take that dollar and you're going to go out and utilize other government programs, other sources, and leverage that at 3-1, 5-1, 10-1.
Right. Yep. Yeah, so it's 3-1 on average across the entire country, because every state's got a little bit different recipe, right? So we can go to a state and match maybe a PR dollar that comes in from the federal government based on an excise tax. Different states have different levels of funding. You mentioned Environmental Trust Fund in Nebraska, and I believe in Nebraska it's a lottery.
Correct. Right?
So the funds from the lottery, a percentage of that goes into a trust fund, and we can do habitat work by matching our individually raised private dollars to those trust fund dollars to maximize and stretch those dollars to go further.
Yep.
Same thing with corporations, Onyx, right? We can go match the private landowner or private member's dollar, a state's dollar, and go to Onyx and say, hey, you want to become the third dollar? Where with Onyx a couple years ago in Minnesota at our Call the Uplands kind of crescendo, mm-hmm. I think it was 2023, you guys held a 40X
party. 40X.
Which is basically, if we could raise a dollar, Onyx through Pheasants Forever was guaranteeing matching it 40 times.
In Minnesota.
And that there's the unique distinction in Minnesota because of the dedicated funding, the Land Legacy Amendment, allowed us through grants to use for acquiring land primarily, where we can raise a dollar in Minnesota for land acquisition and match it 40 times.
Isn't that insane?
Which is insane and wonderful, because it's having an absolute positive impact on the landscape. So in Minnesota is a bit of a unique distinction, but it generally across the country it's 3-1.
Yep.
So the point is, when folks hear this and think, well, I'd like to contribute to Pheasants Forever, well, the easiest, best thing to do is make sure you're a member. You know, roughly 10% of people that are bird hunters are members, which means there's 90% that aren't. So get in the game, help us out. If you want to very specifically make a donation, you know, you can contact us and say, hey, I want to make a contribution to Access, and we can make that happen, or to land acquisition, build wildlife there. Yep. There's lots of ways.
And you think about it, and I'm talking Minnesota specifically, but it's, you know, it's like, oh, it's $100, whatever. Like, it's not, I don't have that much to give, whatever. $100 in Minnesota, that's, you just gave $4,000.
Yep.
Right. So that shifted my mindset a lot. Like, wow, these dollars spent at local chapter banquets, et cetera. Like, it's like, I just gave $4,000. Mm-hmm. I mean, it psychs me up.
Yeah. You can't write that all off on your taxes.
No, yeah. Well, if you have the right accountant yeah. or the wrong one.
But it is a statement that we're super proud of.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. All right. So we talked a lot about kind of the match and stuff. State agencies, you want them to reach out to you if there's an interest in, you know, figuring out how to do a path-oriented program
yeah.
right, in your state.
And we've had, you know, we've had a lot of those conversations. We have relationships with those state agencies. So a lot of that's in the works in several states. You know, here at Pheasant Fest, we also held the Innovative Access Workshop, which brought those people together, you mm-hmm. know, to talk about these barriers, these challenges, and how we overcome them. So, I've thought long and hard about, you know, what's our call to action? Right. What are we wanting folks to do? And, you know, we want people to be excited. We know this is going to build a lot of excitement. We know there's a lot of potential. And we are working to, you know, create that diversified fundraising model mm-hmm. With this support from OnX, you know, leveraging it to its fullest, where chapter dollars inserted into that in the near future are going to have a huge impact. Yeah. And be able to propel this to multiple states. So, you know, if you have interest in pursuing, or, you know, have ideas about your state, why don't we do it here? You know, we'd love to hear them. I think you need to elevate that with your state team, because they're likely already thinking about it.
Sure.
You know, and
sure.
some of those conversations may have already been had.
So, so changing the audience just slightly here to chapter volunteers that are hearing this, and
yep.
hopefully they're juiced, right? They're like, hey, I want 45,000 acres of public access added to my state. So if you're yeah. in Michigan, for instance, ring up Ben Beeman, state coordinator, right?
Yep.
And what we don't want to have happen is have, you know, a proliferation of volunteers hitting state agencies and saying, hey, let's do this in our state. Let's funnel it through our state coordinator, correct?
Correct. Just have a coordinated effort's all we're asking for. But, you know, this concept of private lands access and our ability to get involved should excite people.
Yeah.
You know, and we can play a major role in this. And I think we channel that the right way. This is going to blow up.
Yeah. If you want to reach out to John and help coordination, JLAUX, LAUX.
Correct.
Right, at pheasantsforever.org.
Yep.
If you want to reach out to me, Bob S., even easier to remember, at pheasantsforever or at quailforever.org, and we can fire it off to the state coordinator. I am so anxious to add like a hardcore quail state to this, right?
Yep.
And I know that's something high on your priority yep. list too, isn't it?
For sure. Yep.
Yeah, because we hear it too. You know, we hear like, well, yeah, South Dakota, that's great, but
sure.
when's it coming to Mississippi? Well, yep. we want it. Some, you know, we want the next state, if possible, to be in a quail state.
Yep.
So, let's get rolling. all right, closing thoughts. I know we got to get back to the show floor. There's a big event happening. Ben, we'll start with you. Put a bow on this for us. What's the synopsis for you that you want our listeners to know?
That's a great question, Bob. The biggest thing is you look at yourself, you know, sitting here listening. Odds are you are likely a public land hunter, right? Hmm. And we want this sport to continue to grow, but there are growing pains with it, correct?
Right.
Things get busy. How do we alleviate pressure? How do we provide more opportunity to people to experience pheasant hunting for the first time, like the gentleman from Missouri, to go quail hunting and provide quality habitat and provide access, whether it's local, you want to travel. So this is how we do it. This is how we make an impact at scale fast.
Right on.
65,000 acres in 2 years.
Mm.
That's a ridiculous amount. So
that's a definition of success, isn't it?
So, I am absolutely thrilled to see this come to fruition. This was kind of, you know, my internal goal. I wanted this to happen. I wanted it to go national because I just see the impact that it's already made.
Yeah.
So I appreciate everything you guys have done, and always proud to be a partner of PF and QF.
Right on. John,
that's kind of tough to follow.
You could do it.
Yeah, no, I would echo that, Ben. We appreciate the support and helping elevate this program, and you know we're going to take this serious to try to engage the biggest audience we can. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's going to be crucial, just to support public lands in general. But if we can we can find more places for folks to go. That works towards hunter recruitment, retention, reactivation. There's benefits to rural economies. You know, there's a lot of things coming together here around private lands access, and okay, that's what's exciting here. So, more to come in the coming year. I'm excited to see where this goes. So,
well, as I wrap it up, I don't know how we can say thank you enough. I mean, yep, think about 155,000 Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever members, 1.2 million, give or take, pheasant hunters, 500,000 quail hunters. They're all benefiting from Onyx's investment in our organization and our vision around access. It's part of our mission. Mm-hmm. You know, we're the habitat organization, and this access component comes with high quality habitat and ability for other people to enjoy it, which that's the name of the game when it comes to conservation, wise use of the resource. So thank you, Onyx. Yeah. Thank you, Ben.
We appreciate it very much so.
Yeah. All right, folks. Again, the website, you can learn more, pheasantsforever.org/path, P-A-T-H. We're going big time. We're going national. If you want it in your state, rattle the cages. Let's contact your state coordinator, and you can reach out and figure out who your state coordinator is through John Laux, J-L-A-U-X, at pheasantsforever.org, or through me, Bob S., at pheasantsforever.org, and we'll help coordinate your messages, and let's blow this thing up in a good way. All right. All right, folks. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob St. Pierre reminding you to always follow the dog. Something good will rise. Thanks, folks.